Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 275. I'm so excited that you are with us today because I just love this. I love connecting with you. We have a great guest, and I love sharing their journey, their tips and tricks with you so you can level up your game and you can just rock it at your next event. This weekend, we have GP Madrid and GP Santiago going on. So if you are in those areas and going, good luck. I definitely look forward to hearing how you do. For those of you new to the show, each and every week, we bring you a Magic the Gathering player who has done well in a big tournament. Usually the top 8 of Grand Prix or the top 16 of a Pro Tour are invited onto the show, but we also reach out to the World Magic Cup and the World Championship Series. And occasionally, we bring on community notables who are doing good things in the world of Magic. This show would not be possible without the patrons. Thank you so much for your support, and I want to give a huge shout out to our newest patron, Mikhail Magnus, who joined the Vexation of Zombies and is not only entitled to the drawings that we do each and every month for the patrons, but will also be getting MTG Pro Tutor swag for free when those goals are unlocked. If you go and check out the different reward tiers that we have over on Patreon, you'll see that the Vexation of Zombies gives you some pretty cool perks. So Mikhail, welcome to the Patron Prodigy family, an exclusive group, and I'm happy and honored to have you along for the ride. And speaking of the Patreon exclusive monthly giveaways, a huge congratulations to Sam Bradbury, who was picked as the winner for the February giveaway. So congratulations, Sam, and thank you so much for your support of the MTG Pro Tutor podcast. You will be receiving a Rivals of Ixalan bundle. How cool is that? So thank you again, Sam, and welcome aboard, Mikhail. And in addition to the wonderful patrons of the show, I want to say thank you to Paragon City Games, who is the other sponsor of the show, who has been a pleasure to work with, and I love being aligned with them. Paragon City Games provides the prize support not only for the monthly giveaways that we do for the patrons, but also for the sealed league that we do each and every set. The Rivals of Ixalan Prodigy Sealed League is going on right now, and it's a fun time to play with other prodigies, other listeners of the show, and have a chance to win actual prizes provided by Paragon City Games. So thank you so much. Check them out at ParagonCityGames.com, and if you are local to Utah, make sure that you go and play a game or two there. They have the best store, the best atmosphere of all the game stores I've ever been to. And believe it or not, I felt that way before they became a sponsor of the show. So absolutely love Paragon City Games and look forward to you checking them out. Oh yeah, and the last thing I want to mention before we dive into today's episode is that the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast finally has a Discord channel, and you are more than welcome to join. Go to mtgprotutor.com/Discord to join. We have channels set up for different formats, as well as obviously the general channel that you can just hop in and chat. And this is an exciting new place that many of the prodigies have asked to have created, and we did it. So for those of you who are Discordly inclined, feel free to join us at mtgprotutor.com/Discord. Again, just another great place to hang out and chat, talk about Magic, connect with fellow prodigies, and in the future, we will probably be using this medium to coordinate our sealed league and stuff like that. So as it goes with any new venue, I would really love your help in getting this going. Obviously, nobody wants to be part of a server that has nobody on it, and a few dozen prodigies have already joined, but I know that there are a couple thousand in the Facebook group, and it would be neat to get a really hopping Discord server so that Magic conversations can be facilitated there. Obviously, the more people who are there, the better discussions we have, and so if you are already on Discord and want to hang out with some other prodigies, check out mtgprotutor.com/Discord. Well, that wraps up the top of the interview portion. We talked about the February patron winner, our newest patron, Paragon City Games, and the Grand Prix coming up this week in Madrid and Santiago. So in preparation for those or any other Magic event that you will be going to this weekend around the world, let's bring in our great guest, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a longtime Magic the Gathering grinder and is a feared limited aficionado in the Northeast. Some of his notable finishes include top 8 of Grand Prix New Jersey, 3rd and 9th at Star City Games Invitationals, multiple old school PTQ wins, and 40th at Pro Tour Atlanta 2014. Coming to us from Henryville, Pennsylvania, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Joshua Taylor. Josh, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. A little cold, a little windy, a little rainy, but, you know, perfect day to stay in and play some Magic Online, right?
Love it. Absolutely. And are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I definitely am.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Josh, he is actually not on Twitter. But Josh, we have a Facebook group for the MTG Pro Tutor listeners. And is it cool if we get you in that group and people can reach out to you in there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Even if people wanted to search me up and send me a message. I know it took me a while to get back to you, but that's because that folder is so weird to get access to, the other people folder. But I swear I'm a nice person. If people message me, if they have questions, you know, I'm open to talking about stuff.
Great. Excellent. Thank you. So we'll get you in the group, and Prodigies, join the group as well, mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group. And then you can tag Josh in a post and ask him a question, and it won't get lost in the other messages folder. So Josh, we'd love to learn a little bit about you outside of magic. So are you born and raised in Henryville, Pennsylvania? Is that where you're from?
I was not born and raised here. I was actually born in Hazleton, which is about an hour away from here. It's kind of close to Philly. It's maybe like 40 minutes away from Philly. Yeah, I moved here during the fifth grade.
Cool.
And that's kind of where I stumbled across my first game shop here in this town. So
excellent.
Is where I've been ever since.
So, and do you do school or work, or is magic all you do?
So right now I'm currently unemployed. I did 3 semesters of college. I'm 27 years old right now. So I'm starting to get a little bit on the older side of things, I'm starting to feel. But I did 3 semesters of college. Felt like it wasn't the thing for me. Kind of put that to the side. Still trying to figure things out for myself, trying to figure out my life. And magic's just been something that's kind of stuck with me the whole time ever since. And right now I seem to be on fire. So
yeah.
I'm kind of just going gung-ho with it. Until, you know, after the Pro Tour, I guess I'll kind of reassess things, but
yeah, but then, it's working for now. So keep going. That's great. That's great.
Right.
And on that note, let's hear your origin story. Every hero has one, and you're no different. Like, we would love to hear the story of the very first time you ever saw or played with magic cards. So take us there. We want to be there looking at the cards, smelling them with you over your shoulder. So what was that like?
Yeah, I actually had a conversation with my friend about this not too long ago. So it's funny that you bring this up. I vividly definitely remember this because magic is such a big part of my life. I definitely remember this moment. So I was at a friend's house. Me and my brother, we were at my friend's house, and he had another friend over. And they both played magic. And I'd heard them talking about it, but I'd never actually seen the game or anything like that. And they had their ragtag decks with no sleeves or whatever. And when we showed up, they were just sitting there playing. And I was kind of just intrigued by what was going on, you know, more so by the pictures than the actual game, because I was looking at them and I was kind of like, oh, you know, this is kind of cool. And the two cards that really grabbed my attention, and I'll never forget them, and they're not even good cards, but it was an Urza's Destiny Goblin Gardener, which is like this menacing looking goblin with shears like cutting up a cornfield. And the other card was a Misshapen Fiend, which is just a 1/1 flyer for 2 from Mercadian Mask, and it's just like this deformed little flying thing. And it's just, you know, I like horror movies and stuff like that. So these things kind of appealed to me with that type of so I had them kind of just explain the game to me from there. And obviously I wasn't good at it for a long time. It took me a while to catch on to it. But we stayed casual for a while, kind of just playing with their cards, maybe buying a booster pack here or there, kind of just adding the cards and just playing with everything as we went, good and bad.
That's awesome. Goblin Gardener, I'm looking at it. It's pretty cool. So he's cutting down all this nice corn, and then like the nasty raggedy corn that looks like it's rotten is the one that he left up. That's kind of
definitely. He looks like he's up to no good, right?
Yeah,
he looks mischievous.
That's fun. That's fun. Oh, that's cool. So your first set coming in, would it be Urza's Destiny then, or what was that very first set that you came in on?
So I guess I'm not sure what the set was at the time, because these were just cards that they had. I want to say maybe, I'm trying to think. I know the first time I went to the game store and started playing, it was Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And I want to say this was maybe a year and a half before that. So the set before Odyssey, Invasion,
cool.
I want to say.
Cool. Okay. That's
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it wasn't Invasion. I want to say it was Invasion.
Cool.
But, yeah.
Came in on Invasion. Very nice.
So and, yeah, back when the old school borders still.
Yeah.
It makes me feel pretty old.
Oh. I mean, I played for the first time. I vividly remember the Tempest block. But I think it was a set right before that I came in on. But I remember, you know, Stronghold and Weatherlight and like that very well. So, sometimes I feel old like you, but it's cool. It's cool.
Tempest Block is one of my favorite draft sets, actually. Yeah. So I know the sets in and out. They had it on Magic Online for the longest time, and I was just a big fan of that format.
So what do you think about going back to Dominaria?
I'm excited because I hope that they capture the same flavor. Like mm-hmm. Invasion, Urza, Tempest. Not only did I enjoy the cards, but I kind of enjoyed the flowing storyline, like the Gerard Caspian, Weatherlight, mm-hmm. Phyrexian Battle War going on. Like, I was kind of actually into that stuff. I used to always buy the Fat Packs when they came with the book and kind of read that
yes.
stuff.
Yes, yep, yep.
I too. Hope that some of that lore kind of comes back and they're able to capture that. And maybe this goes on for more than just one block. Like, I'm kind of interested. Even though I play competitive Magic, I still like the lore and the story, some of
yes.
that stuff. So I hope that I could delve into that and kind of dig what they got going on.
I mean, didn't they say that, I mean, the Weatherlight is coming back. Like, it's going to be around. So
I didn't hear that, but I know Karn's definitely coming back. So it would make me think that his associates and all that stuff would be incorporated into the story.
Yeah, I thought I heard somebody say the Weatherlight was the first thing they started designing and like the last thing they finished or something like that. So they spent a lot of time on it to get it right. So I don't know if it's just like, I don't know if it's just like one card or if it's like how it fits into the store or whatever, but
well, they can make it a vehicle now. They could do vehicles now. So they don't got to do like a Predator flagship artifact with it. They could just it an actual vehicle. So who knows what they have in store. I guess get ready for a Smuggler's Copter Part 2.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be cool. So what would you say has been your favorite set, Josh?
Jeez, out of all the Magic. So I definitely just said that I really like the Tempest Block to draft. Another one of my favorite sets to draft is Urza's Block. A lot of powerful cards in that set, but I just felt like it felt like Magic at its peak playing Limited in that set. I felt like the cards were powerful enough and all the colors around that they all, one thing wasn't really dominating over another. Every color could do its thing. It could do it powerfully if you knew what to do, you know? For example, there was like stupid combos. There was like a Horseshoe Crab was a blue and two for a 1/3 and you just pay a blue to untap it. But then there was also another common that was called Hermetic Study, and it's a blue and one instant enchantment, and it gives the creature the ability to tap to deal one damage to something. So all of a sudden you're paying one blue to untap, deal one, pay a blue, untap, deal one, and you're just machine gunning away your whole opponent's board. And you could do like cool stuff like, you know, there's just like, there was a lot cooler stuff going on in those type of sets, I felt like, than the newer formats. But if I had to pin it down to one, that's a pretty tough one. It might be Urza's Saga, I think.
Cool. Very cool. And you mentioned both because of their draftability, and that ties into your limited aficionado-ness,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, just a lot of iconic cards, too. You know, I did play that extended format a lot, and there's just a lot of broken things. A lot of the best cards just came from that block, you know, during that era. So I guess a lot of those cards just stick with me. A lot of nostalgia comes from that block.
So then as far as cards go, what's one of your favorite cards?
From that set or just generally?
Just in general. Yeah, just one. Because I know there's thousands, so one of your favorite cards.
Okay. Jeez, there's so many. I have a thing for like the cute creatures, like the Jovan's Ferrets or whatever. It's kind of just cool to me because of the picture. Bronze Sable, like nothing special, but he just looks so cool in the picture. He's all stoic and noble and kind of just, you know, it's like, wow, I wish I had that thing as a pet, you know?
That's awesome. And real quick, so what is a Bronze Sable?
It's just, it's from Theros, and it's a 2-mana 2/1. It's an artifact. That's all it is. It's a 2-mana 2/1.
Yeah.
And it's a sable. It's just like this little, it's a copper like weasel. And the picture, it just looks like.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's just looking like it's kind of just doing its thing. And I'm like, wow, you know, that's just a cool card.
Yeah.
You know, I like Squirrel Mob, like those weird, deranged term, things that make squirrels. These are all just really obscure cards.
So you must have loved Unstable.
I didn't actually get to play any of it.
Well, it's still around. It did very well from what I hear.
I tried together my friends and it didn't come together. We tried doing a conspiracy draft the one time and we were kind of all at each other's throats with the whole 4-man pods and then trying to make it into the last 4-man pod. And we were just like, nobody kind of wanted to do it. But yeah, I saw like the creatures and how they were all cut up and I saw the pictures and I was like, wow, you know, this does seem kind of fun. So
yeah, we got
maybe I'll get around to it. I wish they would put it on Moto. It would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. My brother and I gave a box of Unstable to a friend as a wedding gift because we're awesome. But then they live in another state, so we weren't able to play with them yet. But it does look like it's pretty fun. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I actually did the pre-release for the last set. What was it called? The Unhinged was the last one.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And this was a long time ago. And I remember they gave out the promo card. It was called Ass Whooping. And it was, it had like this picture of a donkey on it. Yep. But it was just. It was Vindicate for a silver bordered card. So you just destroy anything that was silver bordered, which was, like full set. So it was like pretty cool. And I won that. I remember winning a box myself.
Love it.
It was pretty cool.
So when did you start getting into competitive Magic? You told us your origin and, you know, just really early on and kind of those janky cards at the beginning. When did you start getting competitive?
Okay. So I guess to branch on to my origin a bit. So when I moved here, there was a game shop called The Encounter, which was like, this flourishing game shop of people that would – so I'm like on the border of New Jersey. So people would come from New Jersey to this game shop. People would come close from the Philly area to this game shop. So this was like a good area to be at to grow up to play Magic. You know, there's just a lot of decent players, a lot of competitive players. So after I finally, you know, manned up and started playing in some of these Friday Night Magic tournaments, I started to see that, hey, you know, there's kind of more to it than just this game store. And I started, you know, asking around some of the locals when I became more friends with them. They started telling me about the PTQ circuit. And, you know, slowly but surely, I started going to PTQs with them. And it was more so as like a casual player. But slowly, you know, over years, it became, well, you know, I go to these things all the time. Of course, I want to try to win one. So how do I do that? Well, I got to get better. So at that point, you know, it becomes, you know, well, how do I improve my game?
Right.
Well, then you got to try to, you know, work on that. And to that, that comes to each person pretty different. So,
and that's actually, you know, that's a perfect segue. It was early on, what was a challenge that you faced? When you started getting competitive, what was an early challenge you faced? And then how did you overcome it?
So it's hard. It's hard for me to say that because at the time, so I would say that the thing at the time was that I was ignorant to my weaknesses or the fact that I was bad. So at the time, I didn't know that that was my weakness, so it was hard for me to pinpoint, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
I remember actually the defining moment, the epiphany. You know, everybody has those light bulb moments in their life. I actually remember the defining moment of my Magic career where it was like, you know, I kind of just suck. I'm not this, you know, this good player that I think I am. And it was during a Ravnica block draft, the first Ravnica. And I was playing against one of my buddies, and we had some of the Target guys with us, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Target guys. This was a team of pro players from back in the early 2000s. John Sonny, Gerard Fabiano, Osip Lebedowicz, national champions, pro tour winners, Craig Crumples. I don't know. These are just some big time players, and they would come to our drafts every now and then. And I remember I had a card. It's a bounce spell, and you can replicate it for 3 mana. And you, so every 3 mana you pay, you bounce as many permanents as you want. So I bounced all my friends' permanents, and I remember I thought I was getting away with murder. And he just goes, he takes his turn, he replays all his guys, and then I go to my turn, and I draw a Wrath of God effect off the top. And I had cast it, and my opponent, you know, he binned all his creatures, and he took his turn, and he just drew something really crazy and beat me. And I remember complaining after the match, like, wow, how did I ever have lost that game? And I remember John came up to me, and he was talking to me, John Sonny. Came up to me and he was talking to me and he was like, well, you kind of just played the game really bad. And it kind of frustrated me when he said that more so than anything, because I wasn't able to see why I did that. But he kind of just sat me down and he really just was just like, look, like you shouldn't have used your bounce spell the way that you did, because you ended up drawing your Wrath of God next turn and you ended up just wasting that bounce spell for no reason when it would have been relevant if you would have just saved it. You know, you could have bounced your own creatures and then used the Wrath of God and then replayed your own team after the fact is what he told me. Hmm. And I was like, wow, you know, I never would have even thought about doing something like that. And I guess the moral of that is, I want to say, is that I think not enough people have an open mind to stuff. I feel like there's a lot of closed-minded mentality in Magic. And I think part of getting better is just being staying open-minded to, even if you think something is definitely right, just listening to something that might be wrong. Just analyzing it and listening and absorbing information. I think that's the best way to try and get better, is to be aware of, you know, all the different options.
So what did you do moving forward from that point? Because like you said at the very beginning, you don't know what you don't know. And then you close it up by saying, you know, be aware of your shortcomings, stuff like that. How? What did you do from that time on?
So I guess this is where my friends really came in handy and all these Target players. So after, you know, I kind of had that talk with John, I felt really comfortable kind of going with him and just kind of discussing Magic with him and not being defensive about my plays with him. He the way he spoke about things, it kind of made sense. And it was like, he talked to me in a logical way. It wasn't like a belittling way or like, you know, you made this play, you suck. It was like, well, this is why your play was bad. You know, it was, he phrased it in ways that I was comfortable going to him and talking about our games and how I could have improved them and absorbing that information as opposed to deflecting it. And, you know, not taking it for what it was. I think having people that you're comfortable talking to with, trusting, goes a long way in getting better with the game. Just having a group of people that you're friend, you know, you're just friends with, generally speaking, I guess, is the way to put it. I know not everybody has that. It's unfortunate. And I guess Modo is also another good tool. You know, mm-hmm. I play a lot of Modo, and you can only get your butt beat so many times before you start to replay your games and, you know, just start to pick stuff out and be like, maybe I could have this, that, and the other thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So knowing what you know now, at the level you're at now, what advice could you give to someone who's just getting, a player who's just getting into competitive, so they're familiar with Magic, but they're getting competitive kind of like you were, that would, you know, help them if they were in a similar situation that you were when you were starting?
Okay. So one of the most useful pieces of advice is that I was given is that, and especially when it comes to these longer tournaments, you know, you play Friday Night Magic, you play four, maybe five rounds or whatever, and then you go to a Grand Prix or an Open, and all of a sudden you're playing 9 or 10 rounds, and mm-hmm. it's like, wow, you know, my whole day is going to be Magic, and it's overwhelming sometimes, especially when you're new to the scene. It's like, you know, maybe you're comfortable getting 2 or 3 wins in that 4 or 5 rounds, but how comfortable are you getting 7 or 8 wins over the course of 9 or 10 rounds? You know, it's like, it definitely is overwhelming, and it is even to me this day when I think about the course of so many rounds over the day. It's just how many things got to go right for you to win. But the best thing to do is take it round by round. You know, think, you know, if you play a singular game of Magic and you think you have a good idea what you're doing, you should be confident of the fact that you're going to win that game. And if you just take it game by game like that, you know, the wins will add up without that pressure in the back of your mind. And I know that's a lot easier said than done, especially, you know, I suffer from anxiety. So for me, those thoughts are, you know, they terrify me sometimes. It's really hard to get them out of my head, but you gotta try to stay positive and reinforce those, that silver lining, you know, the good aspects of it all.
So diving into that a little bit more, what do you do like when you're faced with, you know, when you're trying to keep that mentality, that positive mentality, and go game by game, round by round?
So I definitely, I have my friends that I go to, and if I'm feeling anxious or whatever, I'll tell them, and they'll kind of, you know, they'll talk me up, or they'll, mm-hmm. you know, kind of make me feel better about the situation, kind of make me feel a little bit more logical about things as opposed to emotional. And that definitely helps. You know, I have a couple friends that I'll text, you know, and friends that don't play Magic or whatever that mm-hmm. text, and they'll definitely help me calm down. You know, getting some water and going to the corner by myself at some of these events and just like taking 15 or 20 minutes to just breathe and just, you know, take some time to myself to recoup and just, you know, we're just playing Magic, just another day.
Yeah, cool. And, you know, it's different for everybody, and that's why we'd love to hear what works for you, because what works for you will work for, you know, some of the prodigies, and it's good to hear different techniques and stuff like that. But I love that regardless of the size of the event, just play, just go one game at a time, go one round at a time. So it could be Friday Night Magic, like you said, 4 to 5 rounds. It could be day one of a Grand Prix where it's 9. But it doesn't matter. Just whatever event you're at, just go one round at a time. Instead of stacking on, oh my gosh, I need 6 wins, 7 wins or whatever, just say, hey, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to play my best game right now, and just go one at a time. I think that's really good advice.
Oh, definitely. To add on to that, I think on the other end of the spectrum, some people, they get ahead of themselves a little bit where they'll be 4-1 or 5-1 in the tournament, and they'll get a little too excited about that fact when there's still so many rounds to go. And then they'll be extra defeated when they get a loss or two in a row because they had such high hopes. And I think just maintaining a stable mindset all around is important.
Absolutely. Now, through your journey, you've experienced ups and downs along the way and learned from both of those. And so we want to dive into first your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience.
Okay, my worst Magic moment. Well, I don't know if this is my worst per se, but after my first Pro Tour, which was in Berlin in 2008, I had gone 1-4, and it was extended at the time. They didn't have booster draft attached, so it was all constructed, and I didn't really put much effort into it, so I'm not really surprised by my record. At the time, I was definitely disappointed, but it was after that event that I decided that I was going to take a break, and I was kind of a little dejected with things. I don't know if that's my worst moment, but it was definitely a sombering moment with Magic. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. It was kind of like, all right, I did this, now let's put it to the side for a little bit, you know?
And so looking back on it, what did you learn from that experience? Like, what did you take away that you can share with our listeners now?
So that was my first Pro Tour. That was in 2008, and it's 2018 now. So that's 10 years ago. So I was 17 at the time, and I just turned 18 weeks before the Pro Tour, which was lucky because that's the drinking age in Berlin, fortunate enough for me. But so being an 18-year-old, I was just, you know, cocky. Still at the time, even though I was improving my game, I was still very cocky. And I thought that I could just, you know, kind of just more or less pick up a deck and just run with it. And sometimes I still feel like that to this day, sometimes to success and sometimes not to success. But I was disappointed with my finish, but looking back at it now, I can't feel like I was owed anything because I didn't put any time into it. Like, you know, it was, I felt like I definitely got what I deserved, a 1-4 record. I just played like a zoo deck, and I just got, you know, I just got kicked around all day. And that's fine because, yeah, that's exactly what I deserved.
Now, obviously, the flip side are our highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Well, obviously, top eighting the Grand Prix a month and a half ago, I think it was now, was pretty nice because I want to say I've definitely played more than 15 Grand Prix in my life, but less than 25 in my life. And a lot of them have been limited. And I've had like a 24th place finish in limited. I've had a 44th place finish in limited. I've had a 27th place finish in limited. And it's just like, I can't get past the 12-3 point in some of these tournaments. So it was nice to not only break the 12-3 point, but going into the final round, I think I was like 12-1-1 or 13-1-1 or something like that. I think I was 12-1-1. So it was like, I could even just draw the last round. I didn't even have to worry about sweating it out. So it was just a cruise through the whole event. That was definitely nice. And then 2 weeks later, top four the Philly Constructed Open with two of my buddies. So, I mean, I've just been on a little bit of a heater. Those have been my last two major events.
Excellent. Yeah, it's always fun to, you know, look back and see how far you've come. And what did it mean for you to make top eight of a Grand Prix?
Oh, a lot. Because, like I said, you know, I've been, you know, just playing for so long. I definitely not deserve the result, but I feel like I've put in the time, especially for this format. And even telling my friends, you know, I did so much sealed deck before that format for like 2 weeks straight. I was just grinding sealed deck, double queuing them. Actually, I was doing the friendly one and the competitive one at the same time because you can't do two of the same time at once. So I had to do the competitive one and the friendly one at once just to play multiple games and kind of just learning all the tricks and how the turns play out and stuff like that. And yeah.
That's awesome. And I was going to ask, what did preparation for that event look like? And it just sounds like 2 weeks of solid sealed deck and just really getting in there and understanding the format.
Yeah, a lot of Magic Online. Unfortunately, my real life play group, some people have moved over the past year and one or two people kind of just put the game to the side for now. So we don't have our core group of drafters like we used to. So I've been definitely doing overtime on Magic Online. Which is fine because the competition there is, I think, personally, my opinion, I think the competition on there is leagues above most, maybe not leagues, but definitely your average opponent on Magic Online is going to be better than your average real life opponent, I feel like. So as far as experience and getting better, I think you could learn a lot from your games.
Yeah.
And I feel like people shouldn't be shy from asking there are some sour apples out there, but I feel like people shouldn't be shy about trying to discuss games with their opponents and stuff like that, because there's a lot to learn from the people around the world that don't have the opportunities to go to game stores or Grand Prix all the time. There's still a lot of smart people around the world that could provide information and stuff like that. And I try to utilize that every now and then.
So what was the most effective part of your preparation? What do you feel helped you out the most for your Grand Prix?
I guess just playing all the sealed decks. Like I really want to say I did somewhere between 30 and 40 sealed decks leading up to 2 weeks. That's like a lot of sealed decks, you know? And it was easy for me to figure out what cards I was losing to a lot in the common and uncommon slot. And you know, you always lose to rares and mythics, so they don't matter as much. What cards I was losing to in the common and uncommon slot, and which cards were winning for me in the common and uncommon slot the majority of the time. And there were two cards in particular that stuck out to me. And the first one was, there's a card, it's called Colossus Dreadmaw. It's a green 4. It's just a 6-mana 6/6. But I found that there is no other creature in the common or uncommon slot that really competes with it as far as power toughness goes. So your opponents are always forced to double block into it. And all it takes is one trick to go over the top of that double block. And then all of a sudden you're winning the game. And the way that the format plays out, there's such little removal. Or if you know what the removal is and can pinpoint what it is and get your trick in at the right point, it's pretty hard for your opponent to come back from that point. So that was one of the best cards. And on that same front, because the removal was kind of so shallow, Cobble Wings, it's an equipment. It's just a 2-mana equipment. And you pay one and you attach it to a guy and it gives the guy flying. The boards gum up a lot because most decks only have 3 or 4 removal spells in the format. So the boards are gumming up a lot and there's not a lot of flyers. So being able to have access to that type of ability was just really relevant in this format. More so than, I know people, you know, it's an easy thing to say that flying is good, but in this format specifically, that card was going and impressing me. You know, it was winning me game after game after game. So, you know, I told my friends about it and they were laughing at me, but it's, you know, as they started playing it and we were all just having success with it. And sure enough, I played both of those cards to an 8-1 finish day one of the Grand Prix. So
that's awesome. That's really cool. And I love what you said. Hey, you know what? You're going to lose to rares and mythic rares. So pay attention to the commons and uncommons that are, you know, hard to beat or that you lose to on that, you know, really stick in your side or whatever, because those, that will give you a good indication of, you know, what to build around and what to look for when you are at your main event, because obviously common, uncommon, you're more likely to see them. So I think that's really good advice.
Yeah. Just to add something onto there. I know people like to, there's like this unsaid thing where, you know, limited is ruled by like rares and mythics, but I really don't think that's the case. I think they've done a lot better job with making more powerhouse commons and uncommons that, you know, if you draft or design your decks properly, a lot of the times you could race these rares, you know, you could out-tempo your opponents, or I feel like just a lot of people aren't able to see or don't have the understanding of limited as a whole, because they definitely, they don't cover limited as much as they do the other formats, and I understand that because it's not as fascinating or captivating, but there's definitely a lot that goes into it. And when people say that, you know, a limited format is defined by bombs and rares, I like to think otherwise, because I find myself beating a lot of the crazy stuff all the time. I mean, I definitely lose my fair share to it too, but you know, there are games where I, you know, you beat the insane mythic or whatever because you went 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop and you just, you know, keep attacking and stuff. And, you know, just, I guess, you know, just don't give up in those games where they play the rares. You never know what could happen.
Yeah. So in your experience of playing Magic all over the world against people from everywhere, what would you say is the biggest mistake that you see players make?
The biggest mistake I see players make. Okay. So I guess I feel like this is actually an advantage for me, is that, and maybe this translates to poker some too, is that the emotion level of players, I feel like it's easy to pick up on when somebody's more distressed about a situation than when they feel comfortable with it. So if they're more comfortable with how the game's going, it's easy to maybe feel out, you know, what could be in their hand because they, you know, how they feel the game is going. They're relaxed with the game, so they might have so-and-so in their hand. Whereas if they're sitting there rubbing their forehead or, you know, ripping their card and just staring at it like they need a top deck, it's kind of giving you information like, hey, this person's in a bad spot, you know, like I got to keep pressing while they got nothing, or, you know, just little things like that. And because of that, you know, I try to play as stone face and solemn as possible when I'm in a match. I mean, I'll banter around with my opponent, but when it comes to the actual game, it's like, you know, I try to give away as little emotional read as possible because I know what I pick up from my opponent. So I feel like if I'm playing against somebody that's on a level equal to or better than me, then, you know, they pick up on the same thing or even more. So I want to try and eliminate that from somebody's arsenal.
That's, I love that you shared that, because, you know, we've heard, you know, a little bit of that before, but I like how you articulated it, in that if they are, you know, if they're just relaxed and feel like, and you can tell that they're not worried, then that is an indication of how, you know, what's in their hand, or you might not know exactly, but how they feel, you know, they have an answer or whatever. But, you know, if they're not like that, then like you said, oh, hey, maybe I can keep the pressure on because they have nothing, you know? And so I think that's really clever. I love that kind of stuff. And I love how you articulated it very clearly. That's great. So
I guess play patterns fall in the same category. Like somebody will play fast on the turns where the plays are given. Mm-hmm. And when they turn and they stop and they think, it's like, well, you certainly threw a monkey wrench in their gears. They might not have the answer that they need for so-and-so cards. So, you know, it kind of lets you know where you're at in a game. And so, well, here's a good example of that. So I play an Eldrazi deck in Legacy. And a lot of times my openers will have an Ancient Tomb, a City of Traders, or some way to do a Chalice of the Void for one. Which Chalice of the Void is whenever... do you know what Chalice of the Void does?
Yeah, you can't cast spells with that converted mana cost.
Yeah, so yeah. The thing to do is to just drop it for one right away. But if I draw my 7 cards right away and I just see Chalice of the Void plus the 2 mana land, and I'm just like, all right, I'm keeping. And, you know, my opponent, if they're playing a Force of Will deck and they know what I'm playing, they might want to mull into their Force of Will because they know I'm going to go turn one Chalice of the Void because of how fast I kept my hand, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've had this situation come up plenty of times. So it's like, now if that happens to me, I got to sit there and I, you know, as excited as I might be on the inside and as much as I want to sit there and be like, man, you know, I just want to scream keep, I'll sit there and I'll ponder it for a second and I'll finally be like, all right, I'll keep, just because I don't want to give away that information.
Yeah, love it. Maybe, yeah, okay, I'll keep. And
I feel a little sheepish after the fact, because then, you know, I go like Ancient Tomb, Chalice for one, and then they're like, yeah,
that's,
or whatever.
That's, I mean, like, hey, well, that's part of it. I mean,
rather be you than me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there, it's, so I learned that Little tricks like that, you still need to be good at Magic, right? Little tricks like that don't win games of Magic. Like, and some people they clue in on those, and they're like, "Oh, if I can just, you know, get better at Jedi mind tricks, you know, I can win a Magic." And that's not necessarily the case, but they help. Like, if you are good at Magic, then those, like the whole picking up the pen, like you're gonna take damage, yeah. and then you go, "Just kidding, just kidding." I have, you know, a response type of deal. So people think, "Oh, if I can be cute like that, I'm gonna win." No, like you still need to be good at Magic. You know, getting yourself in a situation where that kind of stuff works is important. But when you are there, then you got to be mindful. Hey, like don't snap, keep things. Like think about it a little bit or pause a little bit and then keep it. You know, stuff like that. It does help, but it's not the end all be all to winning Magic. So yeah, I think it's fine. That's cool.
I agree. I think the Pro Tour is more of the stage where those mental, because everybody's kind of, you know, to get to the Pro Tour, obviously you have to be able to win some games. So everybody's kind of more or less on the same level. So that's where those little edges really come in handy when you're playing that caliber of player.
Cool. Sweet. So talked about your biggest, the biggest mistake that you observe from players. And what are you working on? What are some of your shortcomings as a Magic player that you're trying to shore up?
Easily speaking, constructed. I play, so some of my best finishes are actually in constructed, despite the fact, you know, I won a PTQ with a fairy deck way back when. I have second place at Eternal Extravaganza tournament with Eldrazi. I have third place finish at Invitational with a Grixis Delver deck. You know, I got ninth at another Invitational with a standard and a modern, you know, Merfolk and a black white or standard deck. And, I just top four the Constructed Open with the Eldrazi deck. You know, I do have some good finishes in Constructed, but I feel like that's where the game is. As much as I like Limited, the game is more so headed into the focus of Constructed Magic. So while I am very comfortable with my Limited game and I will continue to play a lot of Limited tournaments, I think if I want to take Magic seriously, I personally need to step up my Constructed game. Like, I'll sit here when I play Magic Online, I pretty much just draft all the time, or I'll play sealed deck. I won't really, you know, I don't play Constructed. I only really play Constructed when I have to for a tournament, and I don't practice much unless I feel I have to. I mean, obviously, I'm going to practice for the Pro Tour and then the Invitationals the week after, so I'm going to put in some work for there, but I feel like this is a good time for me to kind of try to put myself into a groove where I could kind of pick some things out that I could learn myself about Constructed Magic, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Okay, so I guess just a general philosophy of, and it took me to learn this from Magic to apply it to life. It wasn't the other way around. So I learned this through Magic, and then it kind of was a realization of life. And this was that Magic is a learning experience. Nobody's going to be perfect at Magic, and nobody will ever be perfect at Magic. No matter how, you know, the best players in Magic will always make mistakes. There will always be the next mistake. And the same is true for actual life. There's always going to be your next mistake. There's always going to be the next bad moment. But you need to try to learn from the mistakes. You need to try to learn from the bad things and keep a level head and not let the emotions get the best of you, because that's going to create the most tension and stress in your life, I think, is when you let those things overwhelm yourself. If that makes sense.
It does.
You know, I deal with a lot of depression and anxiety, so I try to work on the positivity in my life and stuff like that, balancing that stuff. So I try to not have a negative mindset. So for me, it's like, you know, that I work on trying to balance that type of stuff.
Man, that's awesome. Like you said, there's always going to be those mistakes that pop up, and keeping a level head and not letting those mistakes overwhelm you is key in Magic and in life. So I love that. I love what we can learn from the game.
Is the glass half full or half empty,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. So good stuff. So let's see, what do you have coming up? What events can we see you at? We love cheering on past guests, and we'd love to hear what you have in the kicker.
Okay, so I got 4 pro points from that Grand Prix top 8.
Excellent.
And I will be guaranteed 3 pro points for the Pro Tour, which puts me at 7 pro points total guaranteed. Now to hit bronze, which would qualify me for all the regional PTQs for the rest of the year, which seems like a very achievable goal, I just need to get 3 more pro points. So with that being said, I looked at the schedule. I plan on playing 3 Grand Prix leading up to the Pro Tour, and they are Grand Prix Hartford, which is in Connecticut, and that is going to be modern. I think I'm going to play an Eldrazi Tron deck with the recent unbannings. I think Karn is just a good way to kind of fight Jace.
Cool.
So I'm going to look into that. I'm going to go to Grand Prix Columbus. I'm going to team with, it's a team limited Grand Prix. This is like my favorite format. So I'm going to team with my buddies, Ted Felicetti, who's like a big-time Star City Games grinder, and Craig Krumpel's former U.S. national champion, and he's a commentator for Star City, actually. So I'm going to be teaming with those guys for that tournament. And then the last Grand Prix will be Grand Prix Washington, D.C., which is a week before the Pro Tour, and that's also Team Limited Grand Prix. And I'm going to be teaming with my good friend Gerard Fabiano, you know, Pro Tour top four, multiple Grand Prix wins, and one of his friends, Rob Pisano, which he has a Grand Prix top eight to his name. And I don't know him, but Gerard says good things, so I'll give benefit of that.
Cool. Very cool.
And I plan on going to the Team Constructed Open in Baltimore, too, with my buddies. We're going to run that back and see if we can make top four again, too. So I got that, but that's like more in the back of my mind than these other ones.
Got it. So those three Grand Prix and then the Pro Tour?
Yep.
Excellent.
Man. Three team events. I love team events.
Yeah.
They're definitely far and away my favorite.
Very cool. Man, that's exciting. It's I'm glad that you have a plan and you're going to pick up those three other points and get bronze, and then you'll be able to go to the RPTQs and not have to worry about the PPTQs. That's nice.
Yeah, I really miss the old PTQ system. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up going to these tournaments and traveling the hour or 2 hours away with car fools and my friends at 6 a.m., you know, after no sleepless nights. And I really miss that scene and that whole community aspect to it. I can't bring myself to really grind the whole PPTQ circuit as much as I would like to.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have the same atmosphere or vibe, but
yeah, that's okay. And here we are, and you have those fond memories that you can always because I mean I was never in that that PTQ like realm, so you know, that's something that's unique to those players who enjoyed it, and that's good that you know have a way to, you know, continue on with the competitive magic, so that's cool.
Yeah, I guess that there's no sealed PP. Now that I'm thinking about it, there's just no sealed PPTQs. Everything's constructed, so I guess it all kind of makes sense now that I'm thinking about it. It's really why I don't go to them. I don't own a lot of actual Magic cards, so.
So, Josh, when you're keeping your finger on the pulse of Magic, where do you turn to? What are some resources that you use that you can recommend to us?
So, obviously, I think the best thing possible is reading. I read a lot growing up. Articles. I guess now more so it's videos. You know, I don't watch many videos myself, but I guess that translates better than articles. People like Reed Duke or, you know, Andre Mengucci. These are a lot of knowledgeable people in the game, I guess, expressing themselves in their minds through these forums. Yet any type of articles, videos, I think that there could be a lot to learn from some of the guys, you know, Star City Games, Channel Fireball. I'm not really sure some of the other websites.
Those tend to be the big ones.
The higher end stuff, you know, yeah, the videos, articles, you know, all that stuff. You know, I also go on Reddit. I go on forums too, and I like to read people a general, like, you know, just the population's responses to stuff. I like to just kind of just see what people think about different things.
Yeah.
I like to search Reddit and different topics on Magic and stuff. So
good stuff. Good stuff. Well, sweet. It's been really fun to connect and see what you have going on and where you've been and where you're going and all that good stuff. Well, to remind the prodigies, if you want to connect with Josh, you can find him in the Facebook group and we'll get him in there. And then you can do a post in there, tag him in it, and have a chat about Magic. So as we close things up, Josh, what is one parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
So I guess if I had to say one last thing, you know, I've been playing Magic for a long time in my life, and like, you know, like we talked about earlier, there's highs, there's lows, and, you know, they're few and far between, but, you know, really enjoy the highs of it because they don't come enough. You know, nobody's deserved anything in the game. So when you do get your win or whatever, really, really revel in it and kind of take pride in those accomplishments. But at the same time, when you get beat down, don't beat yourself up or don't take it too hard, because Magic is after all, you know, it is a game and there's a lot of influence outside of the game that we don't control. And I feel like it's important to recognize that and not take that too hard, take it too personally within yourself. You know, I feel like a lot, especially the grinders trying to turn pro players or try to take it to the next level, are people who are capable of falling into that pit trap, myself included at one point in my life. You know, don't let your life get attached to Magic. Magic is a good thing for, you know, a lot of smart people play Magic. It's a good thing to have in your life. It's a good game, a good hobby to have, but don't let it, you know, emotionally overwhelm you.
Yeah. Well, Josh, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse, and thank you so much for your time, for sharing your stories and your experience with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you very much. Of course. Thanks for having me.
Josh Taylor in the house, episode 275, all wrapped up. Thank you so much for joining us today. As always, Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Josh Taylor. Go there to check out any resources that were mentioned, as well as a synopsis of what we talked about. And as we close things out, I want to give another huge shout out to Mikkel Magnus, who is the newest patron of MTG Pro Tutor, joining us at the Vexation of Zombies level, which not only gets you entry into the monthly giveaways that we do each and every month, prizes provided by Paragon City Games, it also gives you free swag when those goals are unlocked. Also, a huge congratulations to Sam Bradbury, who won the February giveaway and will be receiving a Rivals of Ixalan bundle provided by Paragon City Games. So, thank you so much for joining me today. Good luck in any events that you're going to this weekend, especially if you are headed to one of the two Grand Prix. And as always, until next time, I am Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.